Thank you very much, Kash, for taking the time today, being the guest in this podcast and answering a couple of my questions regarding Manfit Smart Saver as well as about CreditStar. Now, maybe just to start off, a very short and brief introduction about yourself, about your profile and what you're doing in the stratosphere of CreditStar and Manfit.
Thanks, Danny. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting. My name is Kashyap Shah. I'm the Chief Product Officer at CreditStar Group. I look after product design, marketing, and operations here. Just to give you a little bit of background, I have been doing consumer finance for nearly 23 years now. I work for four of the largest banks in the world, Barclays, JP Morgan, Bank of America, UBS. I built a couple of businesses in payments and consumer finance space, grew them to quite a substantial size, almost a unicorn, if not beyond. And then I started spending more time on alternative asset classes in terms of how people are managing the money in terms of the growth perspective. And this is where I came across this opportunity a year and a half ago. I mean, we have been talking for 2 years now. And then I thought this is a fantastic opportunity for me to join the gang and build something awesome.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And now you're with CreditStar. Can you just briefly talk about what you're doing at CreditStar? What is your role exactly?
Absolutely. So I work from our London office. In fact, now as we speak, I'm in our new office at our headquarters, Tallinn. We just moved a week ago. So you might hear occasional drilling that is happening behind the scenes. So apologies that for in advance. I take care of everything to do with product at CreditStar for both our lending business and our investment business. So in lending, we've got two products. We've got installment loan and we have got credit line. We have been operating in 8 key markets. And investment, we just launched a fixed income product called Smart Saver towards the end of last year. So my role starts from strategy to implementation to marketing to growth to operation side of the things, everything to do with the product.
And have you been...
I have an amazing team around me who helps me actually execute it. So we got a team of product managers, product leaders, designers, operations leads, risk, I mean, the whole gang behind me to run the show.
Mm-hmm. Have you been at the forefront also like developing and setting up Manfit? Maybe you can talk like how this new product basically evolved from within CreditStar?
Absolutely. So Manfit has always been one of our brand. And since I think 2021, 22, we have started receiving some amazing feedback in terms of why our customer really loves Manfit as a brand. In fact, we are doubling down on that. So we thought we wanted to launch a new product. We always wanted to go into the different product categories. So, you know, we for like nearly 16, 17 years, we have been into the lending business. We never moved out of that. But the plan was to move into this fixed income product. And that's when Smart Saver came about. When we spoke to our customers and potential user base, there was a need for a product that sits right between typical equity investments, if you like, which is variable in nature, and the savings product. Because the savings product, as we know, the interest rates are reasonably low. And equity, even though you could be lucky to get a high return, but there is no guarantee. There is no assurance that you know, you're going to get a fixed sort of income. So we thought when we spoke to our investor base and the user base, we found out there is a need and a space for people to diversify their portfolio. And this could be a fantastic way of positioning our fixed income Smart Saver product. That's how we started. We did a lot of experimentation. One hypothesis was, let's go with what everybody's doing in terms of allowing investors to really manage to the nth level of detail in terms of picking each and every loan where the money goes in deployed. But then we thought, you know what? Let's go with a very simplistic approach, which is the whole ethos around Manfit, you know, being Manfit. That's the brand idea. And we wanted to hide all the complexity. So we are not taking away all the goodness of how automatically the money gets deployed, but we are removing the complexity. And these are like the two things that we started with. The product that we see today is still in the very, very early stage, like MVP, I would say. And we have been developing that as we go along.
Interesting. So obviously familiar peer-to-peer investors, you know, they know obviously competitor Bondora Go and Grow with a very popular product for many years. Now something very similar with Moneyfit Smart Saver. Maybe can you talk very quickly about the decision to offer the interest rate of 7%, which is obviously slightly above the competitor note, and how you kind of, how do you find the interest rate basically, and how you came up, okay, we want to offer it at 7% right now. Maybe a couple of words on this.
Absolutely. It just happened to be the coincidence that we are just 25 basis points above the Bondora. And by the way, I think when I checked last, they are not offering 6.75. They are offering 4.5 for the new customers, if I'm not wrong.
4%.
Exactly, 4%. There you go. But we didn't look at any of the competitors. We went to the whiteboard. We looked at what's out there in the market into the pure investment asset class, if you like. What sort of return people were expecting? Now, obviously, you would get 10%, 14%, 15%. So that was one dimension. Then we looked at the bond market in terms of what sort of return people generally would receive in the bond market, what we are offering as a business, because, you know, we have been successfully doing the bond for like many years. You know, yesterday, in fact, we just had our investor webinar for this June 1st bond. And then we looked at the savings product in terms of the interest that the savings product offers in all the European markets. And when we combined these three or four dimensions, and then we came up with a range in terms of what we could go for. And the range was pretty much between 6% to 10%, if you like. So we thought, and then we did some modeling, some calculation in terms of what really would make sense for people to have our product as one of the important component into the portfolio. So 7% fits the bill in terms of, and then we did some testing in terms of how people would perceive that if we launched this particular interest rate. And there was a majority of the positive feedback. So we thought, you know, let's, rather than thinking too much, let's just test it and see how people react to that.
Where do you see circumstances where you would be forced or where you would be happy to also increase the interest rate? Because obviously we see Feds are continuously increasing interest rates. We see high inflation. There is a certain demand for investors also like to look at higher yields. How much do you feel like this is also forcing hands for Credit Star or for Moneyfit then for the Smart Saver product?
We have been constantly monitoring the external factors in terms of how the bond market is doing, how the LIBOR rates are, Uber rates are, you know, the Fed's doing. In fact, yesterday, if I'm not wrong, in UK, yesterday or the day before, they increased the interest rates. The savings rates are going up. So we have been closely monitoring that. But I think considering all the economic factors out there in today's circumstances, we feel very comfortable where we are at 7%. Having said that, we are obviously going to review and make sure that our product has a nice space into our investors' portfolio. And if that needs tweaking, either way, we would definitely test it, adopt it, and making sure that the customer sees the value.
Okay. Let's switch maybe to some hard, cold numbers, some investor demographics, talk about the current portfolio. Obviously, Moneyfit just started out this year. Can you talk about how many funds you've been able to attract already to this point? What is the current portfolio under management? A couple words on this, please.
Sure. So we started testing the product towards the end of last year. I think effectively in last 3 months, I would say we started seeing some really good tractions, you know. Because, you know, in the beginning, you know, we were very focused around testing one channel at a time, one set of cohort, one set of market. But as of yesterday, in fact, we hit 5 million in the investment accounts for our Smart Saver product. We have been acquiring at the steady rate in terms of the investor base. We've got in excess of 1,600 investors. Really good active user base in terms of, even though the product is so damn simple, I'm seeing amazing numbers in terms of how people every day come to our product, log into our platform, check out the interest they've been paid, check out the reports, so some good traction on the engagement. We are seeing more than double, if not more, number of people are repeat users. So, they would start off the platform with some small money as an investment just to test it out, which is absolutely fair. And I would expect people to do that. And but they would come back straight away in the next week or the week after and put in some serious money. So we are seeing some amazing trend in terms of how people are starting to test the water and growing the confidence as they go along with our relationship and increasing the portfolio values.
Can I ask, how do you manage basically the portfolio? Is it something like the funds that are attracted, they are immediately like are transferred to the CreditStar portfolio, or how do you track like all the funds that have been attracted through SmartFave and how they perform? So maybe just like to give an idea how the management is or how the funds are processed in the back end.
So even though the product looks very simple, but behind the scene, there's a whole engine room out there, not only in terms of the technologies, but all the governance and the back office processes around that. So for example, when the investor put in money onto Smart Saver, it's very easy to sign up, a couple of minutes. Then they would invest their first lot of money. The money goes into the behind the scene accounts, and then there is an algorithm and a technology that actually splits the money and put this into the straight away CreditStar portfolio. Now, when I say real time, it's not like literally the milliseconds, because it takes time to reconcile and settle out and then pass that on to the CreditStar portfolio markets, if you like. And then we have a separate system behind the scene where we track how they are doing. But again, one thing that I would say is we don't invest everything because we need to keep some buffer just to make sure that we are maintaining the liquidity in the system. So there is a very healthy buffer. So there is another set of technology and the governance around, do we have the right level of buffer? Are we making sure that we are meeting the expectations from our investors? So if you invest 100 euro, not everything get invested, if you know what I mean. We keep some buffer.
How do you calculate that buffer? Is there like a certain rule of thumb that you apply?
I don't think so anybody can actually answer this accurately. We of course we did a lot of simulations and modeling when we started out this project. We consulted a lot of industry experts around what good looks like. I have a lot of connections in the bank in terms of how the bank, the big banks actually follow the liquidity systems, how they do the stress testing, how they do the monitoring. So we took all the goodness of those, simplified that, and came up with a range that we were happy to launch with. And our idea was we were not gonna get the very precise number on day one, obviously, right? So we have to like you open the door for your product and let's see how people are behaving and reacting and keeping a close eye on the withdrawals, if you like, the user's behavior, keeping a track out on the market sentiments, and then adjusting as we go along, calibrate that number, and making sure that we always have a comfortable level that our SLAs of 10 days are met.
Now you spoke about around 1,600 investors that have already signed up on Smart Saver. Can you talk just vaguely about the geographic split as well as the average investment size that you have currently?
Sure. So it's 1,600 investors. There are quite a few people signed up as a registered users who are just about to go through that verification process, the last step. So I would expect that number to go substantially in the near future. Most of the people that we see are obviously from the European market. We had a set of hypotheses that a specific country, in particularly like Germany, we were expecting some heavy volume from because of the user profiling, the how people actually manage and think about money there. So obviously, German market is really picking up in our portfolio. We have a lot of hidden gems that we are uncovering right now. Spanish market is another one that was a little bit of a surprise in the beginning, but that is really picking up as well. We also have a lot of investors from Austria, Estonia, Finland. So I think the footprint is around 31 countries we've got people from. So the next stage of the journey, what we are doing is, we obviously had hypotheses in terms of we were expecting traffic from this part of the world. I would say we were nearly there in terms of our meeting the expectations, but now we are finding a potential market as well. We're using this early data. So we are now doubling down on scaling the business into those markets. So we've got 31 countries and growing to go after, if you like.
And the average investment size?
Oh, yeah, sorry. So average investment size have been changing dramatically. So as you would expect, a product like ours, in the beginning, it was very, very low because people were, you know, still testing it. They didn't know what, because they were used to configuring themselves. They were used to running a very complex platform themselves, and they were comfortable with that. So it was quite low. I think it was, say, in the beginning, around hundreds. And now we are looking at 3,000 plus. That's the average account size. And that's been consistently growing up as we build more trust with our user base. I think the exciting part to think about here is the diversification of our user base. So it's not like you have a portfolio of 1,000 plus 2,000 customers, if you like. Only a handful of people putting some serious money. The rest of them are like a baby money. But that's not the case. And that is so encouraging that we have a very balanced portfolio of people with not similar, but they've got a very predictable range of investments. We are also learning the type of people. I mean, you know, there is data out there for us in terms of, in German market, we would expect this kind of ticket size. In Spanish market, this is what you would see. Again, depends on the channels. So if the investors are coming from influencers channels, word of mouth, the referral program, direct acquisition, we see a different behavior. And as I said, you know, it's early days, right? So we are still learning. And as we go further into the year and next year, we'll optimize that.
Sure. And obviously, you know, the bigger the user base gets, the more probably accurate is going to be the all the demographics and the data about the financials, the investment size, the behavior. So I believe there is a lot more to gain than from a growing user base than also in the future.
So one point I was going to say, we have been particularly careful about opening the door too much bigger, right? Because our strategy has always been, you know, as I said about the monofit ethos, we want to deliver the best-in-class experience. It's not just about 7%. I want to make sure that we build a platform that delivers the best-in-class customer experience, starting from a good yield, good customer service, good technology work around that. And once we feel comfortable, then obviously, then we'll open up our all the marketing channels at the full-fledged.
Can you talk about the team that is working for Manifit? So obviously, you are kind of now talking on behalf or as a representative, but how many people are effectively working for Manifit? Is there a separate team that works only for this product, or how many people are involved in the background?
So we have, obviously, so we follow the squad model as a business in the Caristra group. So we have a squad for our investment product. We have a squad for our lending product. We have a squad for our core platform. These people are dedicated to building and growing that part of the business, if you like. So in the investment product, since we have only one product, Smart Saver, this team consists of product managers, designers, marketers, techies, risk, compliance. Well, we risk compliance a little bit, shared resources, because we don't need them like a full time. So we have like a shared resources that we can leverage into. I lead the team from the top. I get involved in deciding the strategies. But we have the whole army of dedicated people thinking about it, sweating about it, building day in, day out Smart Saver.
But can you give an idea, like roughly how many people are involved in the back end?
I would say around 10 people core who are like full-time thinking about this and building onto this. And then we leverage onto a lot of shared resources outside of this core group, if you like.
Sure.
And we are hiring as well, by the way, for this particular product.
All right. Now we touched base already a little bit in terms of how the funds are allocated. Can you maybe talk a bit more in detail, you know, where those funds go? What is the flow once, you know, investments are facilitated through Smart Saver? What's happening with that engine in the background? How are the funds moving then in the background?
So as I said, the fund gets into our central account, and then from there it gets diverted onto a portfolio accounts where the money gets invested, issued it to our loan customers. And that entire process is managed by a technology platform and the processes and the governance around that. So we have a team who is constantly monitoring how the flow of money is in terms of inward flow and the outflow flow both at the same time. So, but majority of the allocation happens automatically behind the scene based on the setup that we have configured.
Okay. One aspect in terms of transparency, I'm very interested in understanding like where funds go and especially like how the performance of the loan portfolio is and how well funds are managed. What are the actual returns? I feel like this is a lack of transparency, which, for instance, at Bondora Go and Grow is heavily missing. Now, obviously, with the future development of Manifit, do you plan to publish detailed statistics, analytics, data surrounding the performance of the loan portfolio?
We were thinking of starting something like that before we could launch. But then we thought if we wait for that particular piece to build, it will take a long time. I have seen what Bondora is doing and other people are doing, and it's quite fair. If I'm an investor, I want to know how my underlying assets are performing just to give me a little bit of assurance. I don't need to know all the details around that. So to answer your question, absolutely, yes. It's on our roadmap. We have been thinking about it to find the right balance, not give our investor like 50 reports or 50 data points that confuses you. But the right set of information that actually helps them understand how their money is doing and give them a little bit of clarity in terms of the trust and the processes around that and the performance of this money. So yes, we are working on this quarterly update for our investors, and the same data points would go onto our platform at some stage. But as I said, you know, because of the demand that we have been seeing growing so much, you know, it's only little things that, I mean, we can't do everything in one go. So we have been slowly prioritizing one piece at a time. I have a user base in hundreds. They are like demanding, give me an app. I need an app like now. And then I have a user base who would be really happy if I give them the transparency report like that. I have a user base who are talking about some sort of a reward system. I've got a user base who said, hey, why is it taking 2 days to arrive my money? Can you do something about that? So when I start listing down all these wish lists and requests, the backlog is so huge. So we are prioritizing. And as I said, we are still a very small, lean and high performing team. But you're right. We are working on it. It will be there.
Now you touched based on an interesting topic, which I wanted to refer to now, which is the liquidity. Obviously, to me, the core benefit, the main USP, obviously, to have a very fast access to your funds. Can you say, like, from the first couple months, how long is the average time period from withdrawal request to the final payout?
10 working business days. That's what we have been following. And that's what we managed to, I mean, we didn't have to work any harder on that. It was pretty straightforward because we kept the buffer, as I said, at the sufficient level. So it's just a question of us stabilizing the back office processes to make sure that we always are consistent on our SLAs. So 10 working business days is what we have started with, and we are following that. Now, again, there might be some external factors, like if there are bank holidays, because some investors are from Germany or Spanish market or in UK. You know, when the bank holiday occurs, you know, you need to factor in those couple of days either side. but that's out of our control. But our focus is, if there are no bank holidays in anywhere in the world, 10 working days, you get the money back.
Okay, but I feel like from what I remember, it's up to 10 days. So could be that you even pay out after 2 days, 3 days, or... But right now, you're sticking to those 10-day period, yeah?
We are sticking to the 10 days. We could process earlier if you want to. But as I said, it ties back to our liquidity. It ties back to all the processes around that. It ties back to giving consistent experience, right? The problem with me giving you your money in 48 hours to somebody in 8 days, just because there were bank holidays and processes around that, the experience that my investors going to receive and the expectations are going to mismatch, if you know what I mean. So just to make sure that we have a consistent experience, we thought, okay, you know what, let's stick to one number and follow that. And after a year or so, when we have absolute strong processes and the technology around that, where we can say, okay, everybody gets in half the time. I don't know. But yeah, we will get to that stage as well. But right now, our target is 10 working days.
To which extent can you talk about the fund flow? We discussed it already a little bit on the surface, like to ensure those 10 days are also honored, because I feel like this is like ultimately the main criteria and, you know, what people rely on to access their money fast, up to 10 days. How are the systems working in the back end? How do you build cash flow buffers? How can you extract funds from other sources to ensure really like you honor this high liquidity promise, basically?
I think we never had to dip into any of the liquidity part, because as a business, since we have a lending business, we have a lot of cash flow coming in from that business. We have different parts of buffers, if you like. But so far, we have been focusing on using the buffer that we allocated for the smart saver. So all the withdrawal requests till date we have had been processed through the buffers that we allocated. I don't think so. We had to, in fact, in the beginning, I think a couple of occasions, we had to think about drawing down from the other buffer in the business just to hit the expectations. But we have been just managing that from our own buffer, which is why the initial buffer is so important, that I don't want to go and break my loan, if you like, that I have lent out or dip into other part of the business because it just imbalances the cash flow. So we have been very careful in terms of ensuring the buffer is at the right level so we can manage and honor those requests. And if I may, I can give you one example as well. It's quite important. In the past, we have seen like the occasions around Silicon Valley Bank. If you remember recently, that had some issues. That was a completely out of our control. People started thinking about, hey, what's going on now? Is it going to be like a domino effect in the market and all of that? A lot of our investors, they took the money off the table. But guess what? In literally 2 weeks' time, they came back even higher level. And we were very comfortable even in those circumstances to honor those requests.
Okay. Yeah. Well, maybe something to wrap up this interview. We can touch base also on the situation on Mintos. Obviously, there's a lot of pending payments left still from Credit Star. Maybe you can talk about when those pending payments will be covered, and maybe also what the reasons have been why, you know, I think right now it's 3.8 million euros have accumulated basically on the Mintos marketplace.
Let me start with the second question and then go into the timeline for the remaining payments. So investment volumes at Mintos funding platform decreased considerably during 2022. And not only it affected people like us, but many other P2P and the lending businesses, if you like. And we all know the reason why it happened, right? The war and the equity market and the whole nervousness around the financial systems around the world. I think in January 2022, Mintos had an outstanding funded loans around 480, 475 million euro, which dropped to 325-ish, I think, by the October 2022. Now, what does it mean? So from November 2022 onwards, the platform stabilized a bit, but that was a huge drop, right? And started to grow again. Now, all in all, we were expecting to increase the funding from mentors in 2022. But because of this, we had to now start paying back because of the volume on the platform decreased. Obviously, it's out of their control as well because of the external factors. We could have repaid all the pending payments. But then we decided that, okay, we need to balance out the growing the business versus sorting out the short-term liquidity situation. So so we balance it out. And this would have sacrificed our growth if we have paid everything to the Mintos. Instead, we agreed with the platform, in this example, Mintos and Lender Market, that you know it would be paid towards the end of 2022 as we were acquiring extra capital. In fact, we have started proactively working on securing the debt funding, increasing the credit line with our banks, raising equity funds, and we are in that process as we speak. I think you rightly say 3.8-ish is what is pending outstanding. We are in constant touch with them, and we are looking to close very soon in the matter of 2 or 3 months, if not before. Mm-hmm.